Excellent. And huge thanks once again for an eminently wonderful and interesting 2 minutes of joy, wit and wisdom.
Prime ministers and presidents may come and go, but the certainty of exemplary entertainment on the Midweek Drive and Midweek Drive Morning Editions remains.
Oh, we like to think so. Anna Lewis, you're a historian. How are you in London, and are you set for Storm Agnes?
We've had some really blustery days down this end of the world and a few trees down in the last week. Yes, I think we're prepared. What they do is they close parks like Austerlitz and Sion just to be on the safe side, because I don't think they want the insurance payout in case somebody gets hit by a falling tree.
And yet, curiously, Sion Park is closed, but Bushy Park remains open. Is that because of the deers, or is something completely different?
I'm not sure. I think they depend on people with common sense not to go dog walking or taking the risk on days like that. But you just don't know these days.
You can't rely on the great British public to have common sense. It's a contradiction in terms. Isn't that right? William Coles in Edinburgh.
Well, I don't know. I'm rather sick of hearing all these storms. It's like there's a bit of rain. It'll be a little bit windy. Let's cover ourselves and call it a storm. And it's like every single week there's another storm, which means that when there is a real storm, you're not paying any attention because you've got these little zephyrs of wind being labelled as storms. So what I'm saying about these storms is they're crying wolf all the time. And when they finally say there is a wolf, I'm not interested because I've heard it all before.
That could be sage words which hopefully will not come back to bite us in more ways than one. But in the studio we have four fabulous souls. Tosin is back with us. How are you, Tosin?
Good, how are you doing?
Excellent, we're fine. We also have the welcome return after a gap of some months of Lauren Thorpe. How are you, Lauren?
I'm good, thank you.
Marvellous. And the equally welcome return after a gap of some months for Amy Catherall. How are you, Amy?
I'm very good, thank you.
Excellent. And the equal return of the awesomeness that is Megan Reeks. How are you, Megan?
I'm brilliant and I'm awesome. Thank you.
Marvellous. And the three of you, of course, that's Megan, Lauren and Amy, know quite well our first welcome guest. She's making her debut on the Midweek Drive Live. She's going to talk about a pile of old newspapers. Honestly, it's a lot more interesting than it might first seem. But it's an exhibition that is actually at the Joseph Banks Natural Science and Heritage Centre with, of course, wonderful things. It's already opened and it will run until the 21st of December. We say a hearty welcome to the Midweek Drive Live to Jackie Goodall. How are you, Jackie?
I'm fine, thank you, and thank you for inviting me along today.
Well, it's great to connect with your good self, and I gather you did actually know both Amy, Lauren and Megan when they were working on a project for which they actually scored quite good marks with you last year.
I'm not at all surprised. They were absolutely brilliant. They came along very professional, and they really helped us with some of our media productions.
Well,
they did a very good piece of filming for the last exhibition, actually. Yeah.
Well, Jackie, I'm sure they appreciate that, and we'll be moving on to a pile of old newspapers. I know Anna's going to have a few words about this. William Coles, his whole career in many ways could be summed up in the phrase, no, I'm sorry, a pile of old newspapers. It's much better than that. You're a romantic novelist. Put that time working for Rupert Murdoch to one side. Jackie, what is this exhibition about, and how can we discover how Victorian and Edwardian amateur naturalists and members of the Lincolnshire Naturalist Union created some amazing botanic collections which today are actually considered of national importance?
Well, basically you come along to the centre and you come into our gallery where there are 14 exhibition boards that chart the story of a pile of old newspapers, over 1,000 newspapers that were deposited back to Sir Joseph Banks Society roughly 2 years ago when I first started there. Came back from the Natural History Museum and myself, together with five other new volunteers, were tasked to actually have a look through these for social history and then to actually catalogue. So we spent a great deal of time looking at the old newspapers, and it very quickly became obvious that they had held botanic plants that had been collected in Lincolnshire. And so a trail of research emerged because we found there were 132 different collectors. And yet the collection itself, the old newspapers and the collection down at the Natural History Museum, in fact, was called the Woodruff Peacock Collection. So we didn't particularly know any background. And it's been an amazing discovery to find out, in fact, that these old newspapers have travelled around Lincolnshire, because they, at one point, held the first county museum's herbarium, and hence there's so many collectors in there. So it is a story of what's happened to these newspapers, and finding out about what are now some quite obscure but very talented botanists from around late Victorian Edwardian times.
Anna, I know you love your research and indeed your history and so on. I'm sure you got one or two questions you wanted to put to the lady who curated this exhibition. Of course, that's Jackie.
Yeah, it's fantastic news the exhibition's happening. It coincides with the fact that in Isleworth there's a property called Spring Grove, which is the home of one of the homes of Joseph Banks. And it's very understated. After Joseph Banks lived there, it ended up going into the Pears family, the Pears Soap family. And now it's owned by the local college. But it's a shame that all the distinguishing features are missing. Joseph Banks is an absolute character. We also had a property in Jersey called La Cher, which was lived in by a botanist called William Curtis, and they tried to reconstruct the garden as was in the 1800s, because it's a microclimate in the area where this particular property is. But they found all the sticks and all the markers of all the plants that Curtis had planted in La Cher back in the 1800s. So, I marvel at any exhibition that covers this sort of material. Newspapers are brilliant, and I urge anybody to digitise them and make them available online so that you can have a more worldwide kind of audience for them.
Well, Anna, simply do not marvel from afar. You've got until the 21st of December to actually come to the Joseph Banks Centre in Bridge Street, Horncastle, and actually see it for yourself. But let's turn to William Coles. William, I can almost sense the notion of how can I work this into romantic novels? I'm sure there's a way. William, questions from yourself, please.
Yes, well, this exhibition sounds like it is the fate of all newspapers, and because all journalists, we know that the day after our story is printed, it ends up as either fish and chip paper or at the bottom of the cat litter, or in this case, no one cares about the stories they've written because these newspapers have been used to wrap up old plants, and that is the perfect way for a new story to end up, wrapping up old plants. And so nobody cares about journalism at all. We're interested in the plants that they were wrapped in.
I thought that deeply profound and significant observation would be made by your good self. Let's turn to the team. Megan, first, thoughts on this? Will you be revisiting your old haunts of the Joseph Banks Centre and saying, yes, I'll check that out?
I would hope so. I love, botanical gardens and everything. I find it really fascinating, so I would actually love to visit, so I think I will go back.
Well, I had my first journey together with Kathy Manso, actually, a location report in the summer, and I was very impressed there. Sadly, I didn't have a chance to actually meet Jackie Goodall in person, but then again, I was told by Paul Scott that's a very special thing that's actually only kept for really elite visitors, you know, probably members of the ruling body, the government and such like. Amy, what about yourself? Any thoughts on this or any questions?
I mean, I absolutely loved the whole centre when we went, and there was loads of beautiful flowers and plants, and the garden was absolutely gorgeous. So I feel this collection is just matches the centre perfectly. And I think if people can find the time to go down to Horncastle, it's absolutely worth it. The centre, you learn so much. I mean, we took away a lot from our experience in our few months working with them. So, yeah.
Lauren.
Yeah, it'll be like so nice to see, especially with us having a hand in setting up the last exhibition, kind of seeing a new one and what they've done with the centre since we've not been there. It's only been a few months, but it'll be nice to revisit and see what this new exhibition has to offer. And it's absolutely worth it. Like Amy said, like, you know, we learned a lot when we went. Like, I came away knowing a lot more about botany than I did before. So definitely, if you're in the Horncastle area or even travel there, definitely worth a visit.
Tosin, as somebody who we've never really talked about botany on the show before, but as you know, every week, everything a different from a format, yes, from that point of view. Is this something which you have any interest in, or is it a case of, I don't know. But then again, if Cathy Manso enjoyed it, maybe I would.
If Cathy actually enjoyed it, maybe I would. But honestly, botany is something I've been trying to get my hand into for a long time. So I think this collection and this exhibition is a great way to go to it. And also visit the Joseph Banks Museum, because I've heard of it, but I've never really gone there. So it'd be a great time to travel to Horncastle, check the place out, and learn more about botany, to be honest.
Celebrate the submission of your master's dissertation.
Yes, that would
by
be
having a trip to Horncastle.
Yes, that's the best.
Never let it be said we don't offer the very best in experiences here. Jessica Burtis in North Carolina, you've been sitting here. And don't forget, I mean, coming up soon, Jessica, we'll be beginning to press the button. We will press the button on the start of the Boston Tea Party 250th anniversary. Yeah, I know. We know what happened at the Boston Tea Party. But Jessica, any thoughts or questions for yourself?
I would love to know, what if somebody is going for the first time, where should they really start in this exhibition? Is there a certain starting point that you think works best?
Yeah, Jackie, yeah, where so do you begin?
It basically starts from the beginning and tells the story. We inherited these old newspapers. We hadn't got a clue what they were about. And it sort of, and then we just take the visitor through, you know, sort of the Woodruff Peacock, who he was, the fact that he sent adverts to every newspaper in Lincolnshire pleading for botanists or people that were interested in collecting plants to send their specimens to him, because he was trying to write the first flora of Lincolnshire. And that's how all these newspapers and all these plants came together with the names. So, and then we just pick out some of the, you know, really, we think, interesting characters that were very knowledgeable, but are now sort of, they were never famous. You know, like there's a lady called Susan Allett who was a servant, but she was a person who just had a real talent for discovering previously unknown ferns. And so she was in correspondence with Bert, who was then the deputy director of Kew Gardens. So we just tried to pull out a little bit, you know, about people that are lost in history and they're now rediscovered. So just follow the gallery around.
I remember back in the day, Jackie, when indeed I was a fellow student with Anna Lewis, I used to revel in the notion of bryophytes and pteridophytes, etc. That's part of the biology side of things. I never actually sort of kind of picked up on that notion of discovering a completely different fern. Anna, from your own point of view, any thoughts on this? I mean, are we tempting you to say, do you know what, I made the journey from Jersey to London, maybe I should actually journey up to Lincolnshire as well?
Well, you know what? You're very right. I mean, I think one of the things that coming from a small island like Jersey is you don't appreciate the variety. And I mean, I live near Kew, so I'm blessed. I can walk to Kew from where I live. But there's places like Nottingham that have got an absolutely wonderful arboretum. And it makes you realise that there's so much going on in the background to make these plants happen, make these trees, these ferns, whatever they are. And they need support. So, of course, I'll happily support Kew because I think they're doing a marvellous job. They're talking about moving their herbarium, which is causing a bit of a ruck at the minute with a petition going round. But they've got some very good reasons for doing that. So, you know, I'm not getting involved in the politics. But no, I think we really do need to support the plant world and where it's going, because it's Kew's amazing. It's like a scientific facility in part. It's just amazing what they can do and what they've created. It's brilliant.
As we say, it's all down to the amateur enthusiast. William, back from your own perspective, has botany ever had any interest for yourself, or is it a case of, do you know, having heard Jackie's passion for this and a pile of old newspapers, maybe I need to actually have a leading romantic connection between a pair of botanists?
Perhaps. Yeah, I love botany. My mum's a gardener and I am a gorilla gardener, which means that I'm very keen on planting giant sequoias randomly around the countryside in Edinburgh. But can I ask Jackie, with all these newspapers, I mean, I'm actually interested, obviously, in the plants, but in the stories in them. What if every visitor gets one sheet of the newspaper and they have to find out the best story on that page, so that after a few months, you've got the very best stories from all these random newspapers that have been sent to you?
Well, basically, they're not that random. They reflect, I think, the social standing of a lot of the collectors of the day. So there is a newspaper called the Church Times and a ladies' newspaper called the Queen. And, you know, you get the flavour there.
Are you saying you don't have editions of the Pall Mall Police Gazette, though? Yeah. Am I right? I was shocked. I mean, surely that was one of the scandalous sheets of the day.
Well, there you go. But I'm sorry, but we haven't discovered it yet. But there are over 1,000 to go through. So you never know. It might be hidden in one of the many boxes.
Jackie, as curator, was this something which you always had a passion for? What was it in particular that appealed to you about setting up this exhibition, which obviously is ideal? And how does it feel now you are literally 6 days in to its running time?
Well, firstly, I never had a passion to do an exhibition. We started as a group and we researched and we got very enthusiastic, and the LNU in particular, sort of Paul Kirby and some of the real botanists there, have been so helpful with the information and the support they've given. And a sort of an exhibition really emerged because it was a previously kind of lost story, you know, that this herbarium had been created. It belonged to the LNU. It was donated to the First County Museum in 1907. And then, you know, with reorganisation and the modernisation of the museum, it ended up elsewhere. I'm not going to tell you the whole story. You have to come and see.
We'd be there for days, basically. I mean, you know, we've got other things to fit into the show. I'm sorry, Jackie, but it's the way it is. And you're right. I mean, it certainly is well worth accessing. You can go, obviously, online to the joseph-banks.org.uk link. It's the Joseph Banks Society, of course, and the Lincolnshire Naturalists Union have put this together. It's called A Pile of Old Newspapers. Well worth visiting the Joseph Banks Centre, Bridge Street, Horncastle. If you want to have your sat navs in place, it's LN95BH. Never thought I'd actually say that, but what the hey. Maybe what three words as well. Megan, can you throw those last two questions at Jackie, please? If you can remember them.
Do you know what, Alex? Yeah,
it's been a while. Tosin, you're gonna have to carry the ball here as a true Arsenal fan would do. So yeah.
Okay, hi Jackie. Have you enjoyed the summer with us today?
Has it been okay for you, Jackie? Have you survived and thrived? And have you felt the last few moments has at least been helpful to the glory of mankind?
Yes.
Good. That's what we needed to know. So will we be able to feature you again? Will you come back sometime and speak more of the delights of the Joseph Banks Society and the Natural Science and Heritage Centre? And are you already planning another exhibition for 2024?
I'm not personally. I'm at the moment, having just finished this one and the anxiety that was around it, I really do feel that each person has only one exhibition in them, and I've done mine.
Oh, wow.
But I'm certainly on the team, and we will be doing exhibitions, and I will be helping. Yeah. To curate them.
Excellent. It's not just one and done then, which would be dreadful. I mean, we'd have all sorts. Paul Scott would be beside himself, I'm sure. But anyway. William Coles, has it been a good and informative Midweek Drive link for yourself, albeit without Kathy's cryptic crossword clue because she's not here?
I've loved it. Please may I come back next week?
Of course. Anna, has it been good for yourself?
It has indeed, and I'm very grateful. Thank you.
Jessica, are you ready to stick with us and introduce the lead-in to Lisa Snowden talking about the connection between eye health and the menopause, I know, it's just another great scenario, with Harry Styles and Sign of the Times. Yeah, I know. It's shocking. Actually, I did discover yesterday that the number of Harry Styles fans has increased in the comms and PR degree. It's almost doubled, possibly even trebled, arguably. I mean, I was shocked. Need to have it alive down. But anyway, Jessica, would you like to introduce Sign of the Start Times with Harry Styles?
Yes. All right. Coming up, we have Sign of the Start Times by Harry Styles.
Did that effortlessly, very stylish. Harry would be proud of you if he wasn't hanging out with various other folk, etc. It's the way forward. Jackie, take care, keep on giving on. William, we'll see you very soon. And you're listening to The Midweek Drive on Siren Radio. Bye for now.
Just stop your crying, it's a sign of the times. Welcome to the final show. Hope you're wearing your best clothes. You can't bribe the door on your way to the sky. You look pretty good down here, but you ain't really good. We never learned we've been here before. Why are we always stuck and running from the bullets? The bullets.
Recent research by Vision Express revealing that more than two-thirds of women over 40 are unaware that the menopause can have a significant impact on eye health. Clearly, this is an aspect we need to talk about and raise the profile of. And we're delighted to welcome back to The Midweek Drive an awesomely talented TV and radio presenter extraordinaire. It's the wondrous Lisa Snowden. How are you, Lisa?
Oh, Alex, that was a wonderful intro. Thank you. No, I'm really, really good. Thank you for having me on and lovely to speak to you again.
Excellent. So were you surprised, Lisa, by these findings? And is it a case of, you know, these are things that people don't even realise that over half the population go through?
Yeah, I'm always really shocked when this research comes to light. And I think it's incredible that Vision Express have done this because, you know, eyesight is so important and eye health is so important. And obviously it's National Health Eye Health Week. So we really want to highlight the importance of taking care of your eyes, getting your eyesight seen to. But also a lot of women just don't realise that this is kind of a lesser known symptom of the menopause. You know, we sort of talk about the hot flushes, the night sweats and all that kind of thing. And you don't realise that your eyes also suffer with those kind of hormonal changes. They certainly did for me too. So yeah, I'm just all about getting in to, you know, get your eyes tested and just to make sure that they're all okay, because there's lots of little under, like, things that can kind of go under the radar for a little while, like, you know, glaucoma, cataracts. There's obviously lots of people know about kind of dry eye disease and things like that, but your vision is so important. So yeah, I'm all about getting in and getting to a Vision Express and getting your eyes tested.
We live in a very screen-based culture, and clearly an awful lot of time is actually spent looking at a screen in one shape or form, either in an office admin work or whatever, or indeed presumably just looking at one's mobile phones and devices. Presumably you also need to be aware of the strain that that can place on one's eyes.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like, I'm always in front of a screen, and you're right. And when I first started seeing my eyes change, I was like, my partner, it was actually George, my partner, who was like, you need to go and get your eyes tested. So I was looking at my phone and I was like squinting. Because then, you know, when you don't get your eyes tested, like, I go out for dinner and so many girlfriends of mine are like, can I borrow your glasses just to read the menu? And I'm like, okay, we need to talk. How about you go and get your eyes tested? Because, you know, you need the right prescription for you. You can't be taking, you know, it's like you're not very well and you're taking somebody else's antibiotics. It's like you need to get the right prescription and the right glasses for you. And the squinting, a lot of people think, oh, I'm just going to have a break from my screen for a while and then my eyes will be better again. Or I might just put a light on and still look at my computer. And it's not really good enough. And I just really want to highlight that, you know, women, once we get into our 40s, we need to really start looking at our eye health. And it's very simple. You just go and get them tested. And there's so many great glasses out there, you know. Just see, I love fashion, so I see it as a kind of extension of just having another great accessory. You know, and if you don't want to wear glasses, you can obviously have contact lenses, but it's just about making sure that you are getting that test done and that you've got the right prescription for you.
Quality of life is obviously core to this whole message, but consider the perimenopause, which I think, again, a number of people might have thought, what on earth is the perimenopause? We know what the menopause is. What about the perimenopause? Is that, again, something which indicates changes are occurring?
Yes. Exactly, Alexi. You've been listening for, you know, all the headlines recently. So perimenopause is the stage before you go into the menopause. So that's the sort of stage where your ovaries start to stop producing the hormones, the estrogen and the progesterone. And that's when you start to notice these changes. And, you know, there's 60 symptoms and counting. And, you know, a lot of people know about the kind of more common ones, the hot flushes, the night sweats, your cycles changing, things like that. People don't realize that there's changes to your eyes and sometimes vertigo and tinnitus, and there's lots of lesser known symptoms. So it's just about highlighting all of these and just understanding what's happening to your body and recognizing that these changes are occurring, and getting the right help, advice and support that you need.
And presumably it's also a relief in terms of if you do identify things and prevent them, because obviously things such as glaucoma and eye health in general, yeah. It can be a lot better than actually just fretting about it or continuing to actually muddle through.
Well, if, for example, if you're muddling through and you're using somebody else's glasses at dinner and you're not using glasses that you should be using throughout the day on your screens, working, reading, whatever it may be, you're going to start getting headaches and all sorts of things. And then, of course, you worry even more, like you said. So it is so good to just get on top of things, be like, do I need my eyes tested? You know, am I starting to get, as if things are getting a little bit blurry? Am I getting headaches? Are my eyes dry and itchy? You know, all those kind of things. You know, people are, you know, like at Vision Express, they're there to help you. They are experts. They will not only kind of assist you with your eyes and potentially getting you the right prescription if you need them, but they'll look at your eye health as well. There's tests where they look behind your eye. You know, it's all of those really brilliant tests that they can do just to really get on top of what your eyes are doing,
and presumably
or not doing, as the case may be.
Exactly. And in terms of actually accessing details about the Vision Express research, presumably you can simply go to the Vision Express website and find out all the details there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You will be surprised. But also, you know, get yourself into a Vision Express. Go and get your eyes tested and just go and choose a fabulous pair of glasses. You will be surprised how. And it also, for me, it gives me this sort of artificial intelligence look when I wear my glasses. I feel very like, you know, false.
Lisa, there's nothing artificial about your intelligence. It's up to the top of the scale, off the chart, always
so
important.
Cute. But thank you. But no, you can look very cool and sexy with the right pair of specs. So, yeah, go and check them out.
Lisa Stoden, broadcaster extraordinaire, huge thanks and keep on keeping on.
Thank you. Take care.
Well, there are 31 days in October, so that basically gives you ample time to fit in the 28 days of stopping smoking if you happen to be a smoker. Yes, the reason being that if you can make it 28 days smoke-free, you're five times more likely to quit for good. And yes, we are still talking about how do we actually cope with respect to avoiding smoking and indeed quitting smoking, with the significant numbers of people still sadly addicted to the nicotine. And to address some of the issues of Stoptober, we're delighted to welcome back to the programme an awesomely talented NHS doctor, Dr. Dawn Harper. How are you, Dawn?
All the better for that lovely intro, Alex. Thank you.
Well, it's always great to feature your good self. And I always get a little bit surprised, actually. I mean, that smoking is still so prevalent in society, because surely the message of how bad it actually is for you has been hammered home now, certainly for the last three or four decades. And yet there are still some hardy souls who effectively seem to ignore it completely, or have they just given up all hope?
Well, yes, I don't think it's necessarily ignoring it. I think giving up smoking if you are a long-term smoker is difficult. Everybody knows that it's bad for you, but it is difficult. But as you say, the good news is that Stoptober is actually now in its 12th year. And I think 2.5 million people have done quit attempts through Stoptober. So we're hoping to build on that this year. And as you say, we know that if you achieve that 28 days, you are five times more likely to remain quit for good. And we also know that if you quit with support, that you are more likely to succeed for good. So most smokers will have probably had an attempt or two, maybe several, and it is easy perhaps to lose hope. But actually, we also know that the more often you've tried in the past, the more you can build on that and the more likely you are to succeed the next time. So I would really encourage any smokers who are thinking about quitting to get involved with Stoptober, to have a little look at all the free tools that are available, because there's a lot there and you can kind of cherry pick. You can pick what you think is going to work best for you. And it might be that you want to go to local stop smoking services that are available to you free, or you may want to think about using the NHS Quit Smoking app. There's also a Facebook online community. You can sign up for daily emails or SMS. And there's an online personal quit plan tool. So there are lots of different things available to tailor to the individual to help that person give up. And the good news is that the benefits start really quickly, Alex. You know, just 20 minutes after your last cigarette, your pulse rate will come down. Within 8 hours, you will be clearing the carbon monoxide from your bloodstream. And within 2 weeks, a lot of people who quit smoking say that in just 2 weeks, they start to feel more energized. Their food tastes better. They feel that their breathing is easier. And then, of course, long term, the really serious effects of smoking, things like the risks of chronic lung disease, lung cancer and heart disease, also start to fall. So there are lots of reasons to give up, and there's lots of support to help you.
When you stop smoking, good things start to happen, is the strapline that's being used from that. And as you just said, Dawn, there might be people who actually say, oh, well, you know, what's the point? I'm at a stage in my existence on the planet where why should I actually bother giving up from that point of view? There are tangible health benefits that you've described, which presumably do have a huge impact on people's quality of life.
Quality of life and longevity. So unfortunately, there are 64,000 deaths still in the UK every year, which are related to smoking. So we have a huge drive. You know, Stoptober is in its 12th year. Let's really build on that 2.5 million people that have already engaged over the last 12 years. I really think that Stoptober has achieved some great things, and I think it's got some great things to achieve going forward.
There's a cost of living crisis clearly around, and presumably if somebody said, would you like to have an extra £2,000 a year, then most folk would probably say yes. And if you happen to be a smoker, that's the amount, the average amount you could conceivably save as well. So it makes financial sense as well, presumably.
That's called a holiday, isn't it? Yeah, so they reckon it's just shy of £40 a week the average smoker will spend. That's a lot of money, especially when we're all feeling the pinch. And you know, as you say, the cost of living crisis is really taking hold. So just imagine what you could do with that £2,000 a year. In fact, I've had a few patients over the years, Alex, who, when they quit, have a jar or a box where they put the money that they would spend on cigarettes, and they put it aside. This isn't necessarily going to help with the cost of living crisis, because what they've always done historically is then say, right, that's my treat money. I'm going to do something really lovely with that money. And that's my reward for having given up. And that works really well for a lot of people.
Dawn, in terms of how people can find out more details about this particular Stoptober campaign, and also some of the celebrity endorsement by the likes of Only Way of is Essex star Bobby Norris and Love Island's Malin Anderson, where would you point them?
Simply search Stoptober or go directly to the Better Health Quit Smoking website.
Dawn, it's always a pleasure connecting with your good self. Keep on keeping on. Have you ever smoked yourself, by the way?
No, my father's father, I was very, very fond of, and he died when I was a young girl from lung cancer. And I think that really just absolutely kind of hit home to me. I mean, like all students, I think I've probably had the odd puff here and there, but I've never smoked a whole cigarette. And I think that was probably down to my grandfather.
Yeah. Dr. Dawn Harper, for the moment, huge thanks, and keep on keeping on.
Thank you.
Okay, we've got a challenge, Dawn Harper, there. I know she was on Embarrassing Bodies as far as the TV series is concerned, but she said, like all students, I've probably had the odd puff every so often. So we've got four in the studio and a postgraduate in North Carolina. Tosin, have you ever tried the weed? Has it been ever tempting, or is it a case of don't be ridiculous?
Don't be ridiculous.
There you
never.
Are. Exactly. That's it. Amy, what about yourself?
I'm not wasting my money on that. I'd rather buy me and my mum call it the handbag fund. Oh. So all this money that people spend on drugs and all that, think of the handbags you could buy with all
or
that.
Or just laundry. I mean, that's
the laundry. I mean, washing at uni. £3.90 a wash.
It's like almost the mortgage just to actually get your washing done. It's
exactly.
Megan?
Yeah, no, not for me. Waste of money. But, you know, I can see how it tempts people. At uni, it's everywhere. You can't really escape it, so...
Yeah. Jessica in North Carolina. I mean, is it a case of where we had the eye feature there? I mean, you might have thought, well, he's obviously going to play Smoke Gets in Your Eyes now by the Platters. No, I'm not. But what about yourself, Jessica?
Well, I think for a while I didn't know many people who kind of were smoking, and at least in our generation more. But I think lately it's becoming a bit of I'm noticing more people starting to smoke kind of for fashion and the aesthetic of it, and then kind of ending up addicted to it. And I think it's kind of becoming a growing concern for our generation, even after there were quite a lot of, I think, campaigns when we were young about not smoking. So I think it's interesting how it's kind of circled back around, even though the tobacco industry isn't quite as prevalent as it used to be.
Of course, in Britain, that country that effectively had the United States as a colony 250 years ago, just saying, leading to that feature next. Rishi Sunak has said he intends to ban all smoking. So anybody under 15 who might be listening to this will never be allowed to smoke. And it makes a complete prohibition of the whole thing. Do you think that's a sensible idea, Lauren? Or is it a case of the government? What do you expect from them?
I think it's like, it's a very difficult situation. It's obviously a good thing, but banning things, does it work? Like, there's plenty of things that are illegal and people still get their hands on it. I think
on the plus side, when they introduced prohibition in the United States to ban alcohol, they got Al Capone, they got a whole range of gangsters coming through. In fact, Chicago probably wouldn't have been the same had they not been for prohibition. So, I mean, Jessica, do you think that's a line where you say, yes, just ban it completely?
I mean, when has that really worked? It doesn't tend to have a good track record.
Or indeed drag record, but that's another line entirely for another routine. Don't ever start. That's our line here on Midweek Drive Live. Don't be tempted to actually go down that line. And also get your eyes tested. That's always very important. Jessica, have you heard of the character Benjamin Eads?
I can't say that I have.
Wow. Wow. Tosin, have you ever heard of Benjamin Eads?
No, this is my first time hearing about him.
Yeah, yeah. Amy, Benjamin Eads?
Can't say that the name rings a bell at all.
Uh-huh. Megan?
Absolutely no idea.
He hasn't done a duet with Harry Styles, as far as I'm aware. In fact, we're quite pushing. And Lauren, Benjamin Eads?
No.
We will find out about Benjamin Eads and why he's such a significant character, without whom maybe Jessica would have been part of the same country that is the United Kingdom, you know, back in the day, you know, 250 years ago. All of this and more on the Midweek Drive Live after the sensational Alex Harvey Band and the Boston Tea Party.
Are you going to the party? Going to the Boston Tea Party? Going to the party? Going to the Boston Tea Party?
Ah, yes, the Boston Tea Party, a wondrous experience which led to so much fun and probably the loss of the colonies. Or maybe that's a George III moment we need to look towards. Was it the world's biggest public relations stunt? Who knows? Maybe it's because it's nearly, it's 2.5 centuries since it actually took place. And we're delighted now to actually talk about the Boston Tea Party in a marvellous, civilised manner with two fabulous individuals. First of all, the actor Josiah George, who actually is a revolutionary Benjamin Eads. How are you, Josiah?
Very well.
Or should I say Benjamin? I mean, it could be very difficult. You'd be challenging the spirit of Benjamin Eads for this very interview, really, and actually setting up this whole American revolutionary process in action.
Yes, he would say, good day to you.
Which is very good. Nice to see that the centuries have not weakened the Benjamin Ead need for formality. But we also have the advisory board for the Boston Tea Party, of course, in terms of the celebrations. That's the wonderful Martha Sheridan. How are you, Martha?
Good morning, Alex. Nice to see you. Nice to be with you today, rather.
Well, we can see each other through the magic of radio. And so much. Martha, if we can come to you first. This is clearly a very significant part of Western history, let alone obviously American and British history from that point of view. I often use the Boston Tea Party with my students as a perfect example of how it was the most successful public relations stunt that the world had known up until that point, long before P.T. Barnum got in on the act. But what are your own thoughts in terms of, obviously, now in the 21st century, we look back to Native Americans being impersonated, tea being dumped into the harbour, all of those things?
Well, obviously, it was a significant event in world history, really, when you think about it, and in the independence for the United States and the colonies at that time. So for us, it is the kickoff to what will be 3 years of celebration of our 250th anniversary of the independence of the colonies. And we're very excited that Boston is the spotlight, will be in the global spotlight as the first major event to kick off that celebration.
I'm of a certain vintage that actually remembers the 1976 bicentenary, and I still treasure my Captain America special edition from those particular times. Presumably lots of things will be celebrated as we look to the well, not bicentenary, bicentenary and a half thing, or whatever we refer to on that point of view. Let's just say 250th anniversary. I mean, do you feel as though it's still as important, and does it still resonate with citizens in the 21st century? Or indeed, is it a case of, well, maybe we should just let bygones be bygones, and maybe we should never have actually split apart from Britain in the first place?
Well, I think the fact that we have such a brilliant relationship with Britain now, you know, speaks volumes. But for Americans, the 250th celebration starting now and going, you know, on through 2026 is going to be something that we all look forward to. Lots of activity happening, particularly along the East Coast, the former colonies. So we're very excited about to mark this anniversary.
Benjamin Eades, of course, was born on the 15th of October, 1732. He was an American printer, publisher, newspaper journalist, and, of course, a revolutionary advocate before and during the American Revolution. I mean, turning to Josiah, was Eades a character you'd always been fascinated by? Was it a case of, well, he's using the mass medium of the time to really promote change? So clearly I'm going to be interested in him. And how did you get into the notion of portraying the role of Benjamin Eades?
Well, getting into the story of the Boston Tea Party over a decade ago, I wanted to find a character that was the center of that movement of the revolution, that machine of the Sons of Liberty. And certainly Benjamin Eades was at the core of it, if not at the very start.
And you're returning to yourself, if we may, Martha, from your own line, was this also something you've continually been fascinated by? And actually, as co-chair of the 250th Boston Tea Party Anniversary Board of Advisors, is this a case of I've been working my whole life for this moment?
Well, I'm not sure I would say that, but it's such a significant event for the city of Boston and really puts us on a global stage. And that for me is what makes this incredibly exciting. As you all know, Boston is so well known for our extraordinary history, but so much beyond that. So this gives us the opportunity to talk about the Boston of 250 years ago, contrasted with the Boston of today. And many of the events that are taking place surrounding the anniversary of the Tea Party really exemplify that.
And we talk about the mass media, of course. I mean, they didn't have social media as we know it today back in the 1750s and so on. But the Boston Gazette, did it actually play a pivotal role, as obviously developed by Benjamin Eades, in terms of changing people's attitudes? And really, I used the term earlier, was it the biggest PR stunt that history had ever known that kind of led people to think, do you know, actually, we should go our own way?
I mean, absolutely. It was the fuel for the entire issue. Articles were being written by Samuel Adams, Dr. Joseph Warren, before them, James Otis Jr., really getting into any political angle about how the people of Massachusetts and the greater colonies were being abused by the perhaps overstretching, if you beg, the reaches of Parliament and their intentions with the various acts. And so it was these articles that became that word on the street that fueled the conversation that then ended up sort of morphing into action.
Historians frequently say that if the British Parliament at the time had been a bit more accommodating and hadn't insisted on their taxes and such like, maybe the challenges would never have actually grown to the extent they did. Do you think that's a fair assumption, or is it a case of, well, 2020 vision, hindsight, it's easy to look back?
You know, looking at all the various events, I do think that what we get down to is, I like to refer to it as a conversation happening across an ocean. You know, John Adams will later say that basically a quote where people will be upset when they feel like they've been infringed upon and they will respond to that. And so if you follow the acts, really, it's the Stamp Act that really gets us going. It's a conversation. The Stamp Act is passed. How do the colonies respond? Do they respond by rioting? How does Parliament respond to that? And so forth and so forth. And this steps us through these various events that we've heard about, the sending of the troops, the Boston Massacre, the response to that, the passage of the Tea Act. And the Tea Act, you know, they had repealed all of these other taxes on all of these other products, but left this tax on the tea, a basic everyday product. Tea was the most popular beverage of the day, and tea consumption was on the rise. So to have this kind of non-represented tax on tea was kind of the last straw. And as we like to say, the teapot boiled over.
Indeed, Martha, I always think it's quite fascinating and indeed somewhat ironic that it was a delicacy from India and China that effectively led to America going its own way. But maybe that's just a case of global inclusivity carried too far. Do you feel as though these events, obviously, across the centuries, they still continue to resonate? But do you still feel they're as impactful when we come to, obviously, nations these days that are having their own challenges? And I think we know probably where they are.
Without question, you know, we've had, as I said, many events taking place in Boston surrounding this anniversary, and some of them do involve how has protest evolved over the centuries, and not just in the United States, but really across the globe. And obviously, this was a monumental protest 250 years ago with the Boston Tea Party, but protests are still going on, and this gives us an opportunity to examine what that looks like. Are they still meaningful? Which I think many of us would agree they are, and they are impactful. So it's a great launching pad for some really important conversations across the globe right now.
And Josiah, are you definitely going to be the Benjamin Eads for the foreseeable future? Or would you say this is just one in a continual roll of characters that I can actually bring on board? I might even do Benjamin Franklin sometime.
Funny you should say that. I just played Benjamin Franklin last week. I've been part of a two-person play project. The same year that the tea was sent over, poet Phyllis Wheatley visited England, where she was having her books published. And while she was here, she was, you know, encountered all of this, you know, marvels of England and London, and then had the privilege of meeting several individuals, one of which was Benjamin Franklin. The meeting probably only took 15 minutes in reality, but this play explores the nature of what that conversation might have expanded to. So I've had the privilege of playing Dr. Franklin as well as John Adams.
Well, there we are. Clearly, you are rooted in the American culture and indeed historical aspects as well. Martha, where can people find out more details about this fabulous event, the 250th Boston Tea Party anniversary and more? Where would you point them?
BostonTeaParty250th.org and meetboston.com.
And Josiah, can people follow you via the socials? Or is it a case of, look, Benjamin Eads didn't have a Twitter account or an X account, of course. Why should I?
Well, you know, you can follow BostonTeaParty250.org. I actually spend my time behind the scenes in planning this grand scale reenactment that's going to take place in Boston on the 16th. So, but I take Ben's spirit with me in all of my planning.
I would hope so too. Josiah George, actor extraordinaire, and indeed the incarnation of Benjamin Eads, and of course, co-chair of the 250th Boston Tea Party Anniversary Board of Advisors. It trips off the tongue so swimmingly, Martha Sheridan. Huge thanks, and hopefully we'll speak again in the not-too-distant future.
Thank you, Alex. It's been a pleasure.
Thought Benjamin Eads would have actually launched a popular music record of the 1960s, 70s actually, with the sensational Alex Harvey Band. Okay, let's do a little round robin. Tosin, your thoughts on what we've just heard about Americans 3 years. They're going to have a 3-year party to celebrate a 250th event.
I think it's American to have a 3-year party for 300. But yeah, I feel like I learned a lot from about the Boston Tea Party, about Benjamin Eads, and it's just such a fun thing to listen to on Meet Drive.
Well, wow, that's a bit of an endorsement there. Yeah. And of course, if you haven't already tuned out to Afrobeats, check it out every Sunday, yeah, 7 to 9. Siren Radio. Megan, your thoughts on Benjamin Eads? Do you feel as though, again, he made a mistake? Or was it a case of, well, you know, he's an American?
Well, you know, did what he had to do. I don't know if he made a mistake. I don't know if it's just because he's American.
He did what?
Oh. A party that long sounds like it's for me, to be honest.
Maybe with or without Harry Styles, who knows? Yeah. Jessica, your thoughts on what you've just heard? Because let's face it, you are the person for whom this is sacrosanct history. This is your country we've just been talking about.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting getting to learn about him because I think the most famous Benjamin in the US is Franklin. So learning about another revolutionary Benjamin is interesting, and the impact of communication and print. Really, I mean, it's interesting kind of considering if the revolution would have happened or happened in the same way if newspaper articles and printed pamphlets hadn't been spread around at the time. It was one of the major influences on how a lot of the people in the colonies really wanted a revolution and wanted independence. So it's really nice getting to learn about somebody new.
You know, it's almost like you're back in the class for Communication Society case when I was actually going through that whole process. Marvellous. Anyway, there you go. And actually, Jessica, as I said, I'm actually taking Megan and Amy and Lauren. They're in exactly the same room that we were when we, of course, were just ahead of the pandemic. So I said, you know, it could be connected, but back in that, you know, third floor. And for the listener, that's a pointless line. But, you know, those of us who have actually experienced that particular third floor of the Alfred Tennyson Building, we know of what we speak. It's a sure thing. Sandra North coming up next. Jessica Burtis will be back with us in a few moments, as hopefully will be Rupert Baker, actor extraordinaire, Malcolm Tomlinson, horse racing commentator and actor, and maybe Phil Leonis as well.
It was about mid-July, summer fading like a Friday night, when rolling down a long dirt drive to a bonfire light in the sky.
I saw her swaying to a Chesney song, holding a cup and singing along. Dodgers cap and a pair of pink boots. Oh, there's something about her West Coast roots. Once a year she's in town for a couple weeks. Comes in like the tide and then she leaves.
I've never seen the waves of California. I never left Tennessee. When I'm backwards party dancing with her, I feel my toes in the sand and the ocean breeze. Nothing in life is certain. Like the surf knocked me off my feet.
Once a year she's in town for a couple weeks. Comes in like the tide and then she leaves.
I've never seen the waves of California. I never left Tennessee. When I'm back was party dancing with her, I feel my toes in the sand and the ocean.
Stay right here with me.
Don't think I'll last another year.
I've never seen the waves of California. I never left Tennessee. But when I'm backwards party dancing with you, I feel my toes in the sand and the ocean. Little show.
Sure Thing, Sandra North, our latest single. We featured it last week. We thought we'd feature it again this week, despite the fact, as we called out last week, it's got a lot of similarity to Southern Nights and Dan Campbell. But still, so it goes. Malcolm Tomlinson, horse racing commentator extraordinaire. I'm just amazed. I literally just pressed the send button, say now in Zoom, and bang, you're here. How are you, Malcolm?
I'm really well, thanks, Angus. That's really lucky, because when I clicked on join the Zoom meeting, it said I needed an update, and I've been sitting here watching my computer update for 3 minutes.
Oh, those pesky social media techniques that constantly say you need an update now. It's outrageous. Still, never mind. You know, you could always, if pushed, adopt what I call the official 20th century clause for the Midweek Drive Live and say, I'll do it via telephone. And that's what Rupert Baker's done. How are you, Rupert Baker? Welcome.
Yeah. Very good. Very good. Yeah, wonderful. Hi there, Malcolm, and hi to everyone else.
Yeah, now we have here, and I think it's worthwhile pointing this out, because obviously in the team, we have in the studio Tosin Sejemi, yes? Sejemi, okay. As I'm officially referring to Tosin, our official Afrobeats and Nigeria correspondent. Very good. Amy Catherall, of course, who is an E specialist when it comes to Formula E in particular. And we also have Harry Styles fan. I know, it's sad, really. But she's still very good. Megan Reeks.
What's that?
You can tell. I'm exasperated. And of course, we have Lauren Thorpe as well. So that's Lauren, Megan, Amy and Tosin in the studio. And in North Carolina, of course, keeping us in order. And who knows, Rupert, possibly considering your performance and Malcolm in terms of are you worthy of the Contributor a Week award? Yeah, I know. It's Jessica Burtis. So there we are. It's all coming together. Malcolm, share with us, what have you been doing recently? What's life been packaging with your good self? Have you been interested in, shall we say, a pile of old newspapers, which is what we considered in the first part of the programme? Or indeed, are you more concerned with the 250th anniversary of the Boston Tea Party, for which celebrations start now and will continue for the next 3 years?
Oh, my word. That sounds fascinating, the Boston Tea Party. I had no idea that that anniversary was coming up. We should speak to your American correspondent about that.
Did you not listen to the first half of the programme? Light of day.
Islesville newspapers. So what are you looking at, past headlines, Alex? What do you mean? What are you looking at?
To be fair, it was mostly a case of these were newspapers that were used to press floral aspects of the flora and the botanical exhibits of Lincolnshire. So then, I mean, as we managed to identify after some, considerable debate between Jackie Goodall, the curator of the latest Joseph Banks exhibition, A Pile of Old Newspapers, and, of course, William Sitwell, former journalist of the Sun newspaper. It was not necessarily the newspapers that were the important things. It was the botanical species and specimens that they actually contained. I mean, I think that's fair to say, Megan. Is that right?
Yeah, I think so.
It's important. Now, speaking of Lincolnshire specimens, Rupert has always said, pre-pandemic admittedly, we must do a location report at that windmill. Yeah. Are you still up for that, Rupert?
Yes, let's go up Heckington.
Many people have said they have tried and succeeded in going up Heckington, but it is apparently a very important part of things. Malcolm, have you ever been to Heckington?
I haven't, but I have been to a windmill.
Nice.
Well, that's a good sign. No, that's great.
Windmills of our mind. Okay, Rupert, you're back on the show after a significant gap, and obviously we've missed you. Yeah. But I want to go through this official IMDb line of things that we've got here. So, Rupert Baker, born in Folkestone, Kent. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And
born in Nigeria,
this is the whole point why Tosin is destiny, because you were basically, your parents had returned from a mission field in Nigeria where your mother was a teacher and your father was a doctor. So yeah. Tosin, has there been, by the Nigerian government, have there been an acknowledgement that Rupert Baker's mum and dad were once in the country?
No, they haven't, but I'll talk to the government to do that real quick.
This is very true. This is the new global reach, Rupert, of the Midweek Drive Live, which connects, the history of Nigeria with the whole range of things. However, you didn't grow up in Nigeria, sadly. You grew up in Deal and then later the Wealds of Kent.
Yes.
15 years of age, You moved to Hythe in Kent, where your love of acting grew during your frequent trips to the local cinema, The Ritz, where, bad news coming up, you chain-smoked through endless double bills and collected old film posters donated by the manager, Don Blythe.
Yeah, it was a dead ringer for Roy Kinnear. Yeah. And our cleaner lady, Lexi, she used to work round there, do afternoons and things. So she was either on hot dogs or doing the bingo downstairs. Because, you know, they did that thing of, because the cinema attendances were down, they chopped them. So they kept the movie theatre upstairs, or half of it, and then they put a bingo, room and all the rest of it downstairs. So there you go. Lovely.
Well, it just, and hopefully you've long given up the nicotine habit. Listen, it's Stoptober in a few days' time.
No, I have actually. I have sort of,
this is the man I can reveal to the listener who, after doing a 24-hour broadcasting marathon with me in a studio in London, took me off to actually have a sword fencing session. I mean, 1986, still, that was just 10 years after the bicentenary. Still, never mind. Due to dyslexia, you were unable to become a pilot in the RAF.
Yeah, thank God. Oh dear, you know.
I hope you're paying attention, Malcolm, because we will be quizzing you on this tale of Rupert. You know, it opens up a whole range of things.
I have to tell you, Alex, I can't hear a word Rupert saying. I don't know if it's only me, but it's not
dear.
Coming.
Well,
like the ITV drama the other night that everyone's getting upset about. The long shadows say they couldn't hear anything, so they were putting their subtitles on. I don't think I can do subtitles. Is that any better?
Don't worry. Actually, Rupert, we can hear you in the studio. The listener can hear you. Tragically, our Zoom contact people are having one or two challenges listening to you, which is a bit of a pity. But I mean,
it's always challenging listening to me. So that's okay.
Okay, we'll carry on. Don't worry, you can hear them, and we can throw various questions in there. Maybe it's just a case of the technology sometimes is stretched too hard in terms of that. So, you then unable to take part in the RAF, you actually showed a talent, which I have to endorse. You produced some fantastic art, images and drama, etc. But although you considered a career in graphic design and painting, you decided to become an actor.
Yeah, silly boy.
Any regrets with respect to that? I mean, because Tosin will acknowledge, a couple of weeks ago we featured an actor on the programme who was extraordinary, I think, to be fair. He sort of had a whole wealth of experiences. And in fact, he'd written an autobiography which was called Inconsequential and Irrelevant. Which apparently was a critical line of the whole sort of sequence. He may return one day. I mean, Rupert, different side of things there. But what memories do you have from the acting profession? And I'll put this question to Malcolm as well, as we reflect upon the last few decades.
I'm sorry. No, go on. Yes, as you were.
Yeah, exactly.
You make me work tonight.
what are the highlights? But was it London's Burning, or is it a case of no? That was just one little page turner in the oeuvre.
No, there've been so many highlights, you know, and some lowlights over the years. No, it's all been great fun. You know, it's a beast, as anybody knows. And you know, you kind of feast or famine. It's great when the work's coming in, and then you hit other bits where it's, you know, you don't turn the wheel at all. The series was great. I've been very blessed. I've been able to do some really good things. I did this movie Life Force with Tobe Hooper. It was the first film I ever got, and that was great. It was on Talking Pictures last week on Friday or Saturday. And no, it wasn't. It was on Legend. Anyway, it was a great catch up. Mm. Barry Norman hated it,
he was wrong. And also, Rupert, not only did Barry Norman hate Life Force, he's lost his Life Force because he died a few years ago. So the revenge is sweet. Okay, to live is the best.
Become a critic.
It's very true. And I still like Life Force. Okay, I'm not sure whether Jessica or Malcolm heard any of that at all. But,
Do you want to translate?
I'll sort of do this because, Malcolm, we're talking about reflections, etc. And I've often felt in many ways it's a sad loss to the acting profession that as yet you have not co-starred with Rupert Baker on stage or screen in any of your roles so far. I mean, is it too late, do you think, Malcolm, or do you think maybe we can do the remake of The Persuaders, maybe we can do Curtis and Moore and so on for the 21st century?
Yeah, well, I'm up for it.
I'm up for anything.
Sorry, Malcolm, for the moment that I'd actually turned you down, so we missed the first part of that. Carry on. You're live now, and I've turned you down.
I was just saying, from my point of view, I'd be absolutely delighted to work with Rupert, and I hope the opportunity comes up. You never know in this game, do you? You never really know what's around the corner.
Well, we may fully finish up down the water mill at Sonning at some stage, but I'd love to work with you, mate. I'm sure it'd be a blast.
Yeah, well, there we are, because, of course, you have the bond of being midweek drivettes, which, as Jessica will attest to, is a significant thing and keeps going even when you change countries to try and get away from the actual piece. But that's fine. It's okay. By the way, Jessica, what is life like currently in North Carolina? Are you settling into the fall, as I believe you former ex-colonists actually refer to this whole thing? And is it a case of, you know, that's life in the East Coast of the US of A?
Yeah, I mean, I think now that we're getting into the end of September, things are definitely becoming more like autumn. And I mean, tying back to that Boston Tea Party conversation, the reason why Americans call it fall is actually because that term started in Britain, and then the colonies just kept it going. I don't know why we liked it so much and kept it going, but we did. But I'm excited to see all of the autumn events, the hay rides, the carnivals, the festivals. And I'm very excited to hear how it is over in England too as we get closer into October.
Okay, we'll throw that to Rupert. Are you a keen fan of the season of October and autumn, or is it a case of it just comes and goes? It moves so quickly these days.
Well, I suppose that's very zen if you look at it that way. But no, I like autumn and I like winter. And I'm a bit of a depressive at heart, and I love seaside towns, you know, out of season. Doesn't worry me at all. Love all that, and walks in the leaves and all that rubbish. It's good stuff.
Skegness,
and you get to read a lot and stay in, man.
Skegness in the autumn sunshine. It's a cinematic treat waiting to be developed and all sorts of things. And Malcolm, back in the day when we used to take part in those murder mysteries, Top Draw Productions, as far as I recall. Yes, I'm having a nostalgic kick today. What for you was the highlight of Top Draw Productions, that murder mystery professional company, band of players, which I was fortunate to be part of for a wee while back at the turn of the century?
You know, Alex, I think the highlight for me was watching you play that swaggering American delinquent Joe. I just thought you did a superb.
Wow, Malcolm T, can you honestly say that about the whole system? This was for British Telecom, wasn't it? Or was it BP? It was some strange multinational company who kind of, for some bizarre reason, thought I actually was an American. To change that immediately.
I think you gave us your character more than once, actually, Alex.
Did I? But, I like to have a reprise every so often. It's just off the course.
Yeah.
Even though we tried to kill you off before the dessert.
It's constantly. Yeah. I realised my number was up on that basis. But we're not here to talk about murder mysteries and so on. Malcolm, have you got any questions you want to put to Rupert, even though you won't be able to hear the answer? So I'll translate. So.
Well, yeah, I'd love to know what he's up to now. Has he covered that already?
Rupert, what are you up to now?
Well, at the minute, I was meant to be doing a horror film. I've done some of the horror film, but the horror film is parked, and they're trying to sort out when we sort of resume. And we may resume later in the autumn, or we may hold until the new year, January, February. Apart from that, I've moved into a new house, and I've got a garden for the first time ever. So that's sort of a marvellous.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I don't know that I'm any good. And luckily, the lady that had it before planted lots of exotic things, so it makes me look like I'm better than I actually am. And I'm having great fun sort of trying to get that going. And, you know, and fix this place up. So, I'm happy as Larry.
It is, in those immortal words, all good. And in case you missed that completely, Malcolm, I'll say that Rupert is in a horror movie that has taken a suspension in filming, probably not down to the actor's strike or indeed any other sort of initials. And indeed, he's following the footsteps in many ways of Michael McStay, who was so traumatised by his first programme here, after, of course, writing his autobiography, Inconsequential and Irrelevant, A Worm's Eye View of Acting, he went into his garden to actually sit down with a glass of vodka. That's just by the hospital. So it goes.
I might try that myself.
Honestly,
I've been dry for years.
Malcolm, you've got four fine folk in the studio here. Any questions you'd like to put to either Amy Catherall, or Lauren Thorpe, Megan Reeks, or indeed Tosin Sajemi? You could talk to Tosin about how relieved he is having almost reached the stage where he presses submit on his dissertation, which was all about Balenciaga, fast fashion, controversy, crisis management in the fashion industry. I mean, it's been traumatic, hasn't it, Tosin?
It is, but we're almost there,
Two more days. Exactly. And how many words will be submitted?
15,000
15 words. English thousand, 15,000 English words will so be put much. Into place there. Anyway, Malcolm, not that I'm pointing you at anybody, who do you wish to speak to?
Well, is Tosin the only one who's submitting a dissertation, or is everybody else doing one as well?
Well, if the others do it in the next week, I'll be very impressed because they'll have done it literally in record time. Two of them haven't had preliminary meetings with their supervisor yet, but you know. But it's in hand. I mean, already Amy started off with her undergraduate dissertation. A mere 10,000 words, though. I mean, it's just a mere 10,000 words. You know? So that'll be coming through. Anyway. Malcolm, back to you.
Okay, so Tosin, tell us why you chose the subject that you chose for your dissertation. What appealed to you about the fashion industry and the dissertation that you decided to write?
So fashion has been a big interest of mine for a while, but I've just put on back burner because I've been doing a lot of things in music and PR basically. But then came an opportunity to work on something in crisis communication, and I remembered in a class where Whitaker was talking about Balenciaga's crisis, and he had to do like these teddy bears that were dressed in BDSM, and it wasn't really good. And I was like, that would be a cool topic to cover on and see how they managed the crisis, and how like they go back to it, and how like people perceived the industry and what they did, and if it was good perception of them or bad perception of them. And from there on, and it's been an amazing experience since. I've learned more about the United Colour Benetton, a lot of things. So it's been cool to get back into the fashion side and also connect priorities, basically.
Yeah, and did you have to meet with a lot of fashion designers when you were writing your dissertation?
No, because I was on the marketing and PR side of it and the social media side. So they've already done all the designs and everything. It was just the way they portrayed the designs to on social media and like to the public wasn't really good. And I was just on that side trying to understand how they're trying to stop the crisis from being bigger than what it is and come back stronger, basically.
Okay, so is PR your big interest as well as fashion?
Yeah, PR is my big interest. PR or branding, I have a lot of interest. Well, like PR is part of them.
I have to reveal, Malcolm, that Tosin is a supporter of the football club in North London called, I believe, Woolwich Arsenal. Or they used to be. I mean, I think they dropped the Woolwich now.
Yeah, they dropped the Woolwich for a long time.
Now. Like, you know, the some kind of, you know, Arsene Wenger, I believe, was which is very easy because those were the days where you could actually identify the team that was managed by the name that was actually there. It's a bit like in University of Lincoln, Ian Barnsley, Sports Barnsley, Arsene Wenger is obviously in charge of Arsenal. Stop.
Well, they're doing well, aren't they? They're doing well at the minute, the Arsenal.
Yes, we are. We must still doing better, so...
Well, as you know, there comes a time where Manchester City will continue to echo that. But we're not here. Let's not talk football at this particular stage. Rupert, anything you want to chip in to Tosin about from your own questions, given that I've just, you know, realised that Jessica Butters is in a really difficult position here for selecting contributor of the week, because she did have to say, I couldn't hear a word that Rupert was saying. It's nothing to do with your diction, Rupert. That's perfectly okay in the enunciation. It's a technical problem, so, you know, carry on.
Well, what's in this year then? Where are we going? What's the look and what's the next big thing? Or what are we doing for the autumn and early next year?
You can gamble on that one, Tosin, but as you said, you're not necessarily a fashion expert, although maybe you're just a style setter secretly.
Yeah, maybe. But for next year, I think they're focusing a lot more on sustainable fashion. I think sustainable fashion is coming into season now. Because of what happened last year, especially Balenciaga, I think a lot of people are trying to focus on more sustainable things and are trying to brand themselves as people that don't do fast fashion a lot, especially all the Primark shin them too. So I think autumn and for the rest of 2024, we'll be a lot of companies trying to move into cool fashion and recycling fashion, upcycling fashion, basically. And That's my own trend. That was
Let's just happening. Test that with our three fashionistas here from the final year of the comms and PR programme. Megan, fast fashion, is it the way to go? Or is it a case of, no, I personally never wear anything more than once?
Well, I love a good charity shop. I love a good vintage shop. But I am wearing a H&M top and some things from Primark. So I can't say I'm very good at...
And in those immortal words, Amy, of the red carpet in many an experience, which I mean, Malcolm's daughter Eleanor regularly sort of experiences, who are you wearing?
I've got to admit, I'm wearing Primark, but M&S jeans, they've done me well, but I think they're about to go.
See, I mean, I hope, Malcolm, that even though Eleanor's got married to a rugby player, no less, she'll still actually sort of wear kind of the authentic, she'll still keep it real, she'll still have that realness, you know, that Eleanor Tomlinson, who long before she was in Poldark and other scenarios, she clearly, you know, had that keep it real Irish dancing soul. Will that still be happening, or does it still happen?
I think she'd love to have a day out with Megan, actually, because she loves popping into vintage shops and charity shops. She's a real devotee of those, and very rarely comes out without anything. So she'd love an afternoon shopping trip with Megan, I think.
Could be a new series, Shopping with Eleanor Tomlinson and Megan Reeks. It could happen. Lauren, yes. Any fashion thoughts?
I think... Oh. I do think, like, you know, with the whole fast fashion thing, it's one of them it's a whole complex situation. Like, I do wear fast fashion things, but I do agree with, like, sustainability, but there's also a lot more, like, sustainability isn't the only factor. It's, like, cost is a big thing. You know, we're all students. Not a lot of money in the bank account, so sometimes a Primark trip is needed, but I think
Not saying that Primark is obviously just for students who are penniless and need to actually have something that they can actually use.
Use them all the time.
Well, there we are, you see. Rupert has agreed, as a student of life, you know, critical from that perspective. So, yeah. Interesting. We're almost getting into financial influencers or finfluencers, which will be coming up very shortly. Malcolm, I don't know if you're going to cope with this at all, really, because as you know, normally, before we ask those last two questions, we sort of prep you by saying, how do you feel about doing that immaculate, and I say the word deliberately, immaculate horse racing commentary aspect? And by the way, where was the last horse race that you commented? Where was it? What were you doing?
Actually at the track and on TV. It was Beverly yesterday. It was their final meeting, my final meeting of the season. I'm at Newcastle on Friday and Market Raisin on Saturday. So that's both your necks of the woods,
I was also privileged to actually once share the commentator's box in Newcastle, I believe. In it. Was it Gateshead? It was one of those two. We had Hexham. I think it might have been Hexham, in fact.
It was Hexham.
Anyway, he's very good. I'm just saying, he's very good from that point of view. As he'll demonstrate in a few moments, because we have Megan Reeks, Lauren Thorpe, Amy Cattrell, Tosin Sojemi, Rupert Baker, who will be able to hear you, Malcolm, so that's one good thing. He can hear you. It's beyond the veil, you know. He's in the garden, you know, tapping the table and postcode. He's exactly. Are you there? And, of course, Jessica Burtis. But before we come round to that, we need to throw those last two questions, of which I'm going to ask Tosin to throw them both to you.
Hi, Rupert. Hi, Malcolm. So I need to ask you, have you had an astounding time with us on the Zuma?
Astounding time, Malcolm. You know, we've raised that bar. Not reasonably interesting, astounding.
Really have. I really have had an excellent time with you. Thank you. I wish I could have heard more of Rupert or something of Rupert.
Well, the good news is a couple of hours after the show stops, you can play it back via a podcast. So it's all there. You know, it's listen again. The siren bonus from that point of view. So it's all there. I mean, Rupert started doing these shows where you had to wait about 3 or 4 days before a cassette tape would land in the post where you knew what he actually said. But, you know, now... it's fairly instant. You can go with that, you know, essentially. So that's good. Will you come back again, Malcolm?
Of course I will, Alex. Be delighted.
Rupert, has it been good for you the last 20 or so minutes of life on the Midweek Drive? Good.
Yeah, absolutely wonderful.
And will you come back again and maybe even try and connect via Zoom?
Yes, definitely. and I'll see what I can do about the other technical issues. Yeah, so we're kind of more in the room.
Well,
yeah.
It's just, you know, it's a nice sort of thing from that point of view. So that's great. Okay, well, stay ready, Rupert, for a few moments. Listener, prepare yourself, because we're going into Katy Perry and Daisies. Which I thought, in the current Russell Brand world in which we're living, sorry, Russell, dangerous line there, we thought we'd deal with one of his exes, etc. So, Malcolm, would you like to launch into your superb horse racing scenario? Away you go.
And they're under orders for the midweek drive handicap. Away they go. Lauren's away well. Megan's just tucked in behind them. Amy on the outside. And there's Tosin tucked in behind the pace. Rupert Baker's coming strongly behind them. But nobody can hear him. Oh, here's Jessica. She can't hear him either. They're inside the final half furlong. And Katy Perry's coming strongly on the outside. We're going to go to Katy Perry. Katy Perry's won it.
I guess you're out of your mind till it actually happens. One in 7 billion, why can't it be me? They told me I was out there, tried to knock me down. Took those sticks and stones, showed them I could build a house. They tell me that I'm crazy, but I'll never let them change me. So they cover me in daisies, daisies, daisies. They said I'm going nowhere, tried to get me out. Took those sticks and stones, showed them I could build a house. They tell me that I'm crazy. So they cover me in daisies, daisies, daisies. When did we all stop believing in magic? Why did we put all our hopes in a box in the attic? I'm the long shot, I'm the Hail Mary. Why can't it be me? They told me I was out there, try to knock me down. Took those sticks and stones, showed them I could build a house. They tell me that I'm crazy, but I'll never let them change me. So they cover me in daisies, daisies, daisies. They said I'm going nowhere, try to get me out. Took those sticks and stones, showed them I could build a house. They tell me that I'm crazy, but I'll never let them change me. So they cover me in daisies. Why can't it be me? They told me I was out there, trying to knock me down. Took those sticks and stones.
The Finfluencer. Yes, it's another one of those wonderful portmanteau words. Financial influencer, I think, is its origin. And how do we actually relate to the role of the Finfluencer in an era where, obviously, social media, social channels, the web, and so on, becomes ever more prevalent? Well, somebody who's got some interesting thoughts and views and possibly advice with respect to dealing with Finfluencers is indeed the Academic Dean at the London Academy of Trading, or LAT. That's Paddy Osborne. How are you, Paddy?
Yeah, very well, thanks. How are you?
Excellent. So the Finfluencer, is this something which is the 21st century incarnation of the bloke down the pub who actually said, I've got an absolutely surefire deal which is going to actually get you millions of pounds on the stock exchange. Just put all your money in here and all will be well.
In a word, yes. Yes. And the other thing, the difference is that the man down the pub can now talk to 100,000 or a million people at the same time. And he also gets a commission for anything that he introduces. So this is the issue that we have with Finfluencers. I mean, just to define a Finfluencer, a person who, by virtue of their popular or cultural status, has the ability to influence financial decision-making process of others through promotions or recommendations on social media. And so they're basically using celebrity status to entice followers to invest in various different things, but they will get commissions for this. And this is just fundamentally a conflict of interest. They're generally unregulated. There's no formal oversight from regulators. They don't have the qualifications. Some of them do, but many of them don't. And you know, it's just fundamentally, it's a problem. Nearly 50% of 16 to 34 year olds are influenced by social media to make an investment.
And it's a clearly we see situations where people can influence folk in terms of their fashion choices, in terms of style approaches, in terms of the kind of things that they actually like. Is this just a natural kind of aspect that, well, obviously finances, it's just another service, we're going to work through that. Of course, the challenge here is that if people actually make the wrong decisions, there really presumably is no comeback. It's a case of, well, buyer beware.
Yeah, absolutely. And people don't appreciate this. This FOMO is actually the reason that probably, I think it's 25% of people state is the reason that they have bought stocks and shares is because fear of missing out because all their friends are doing it. And, you know, fundamentally, there is no comeback on these people. So it's a little bit of a wild west out there, and it's a growing issue, and it's something that the regulators need to clamp down quite hard on.
Now, the Financial Conduct Authority is attempting to tackle this issue, and they're publishing new guidelines for firms promoting financial products. Is it a case of, as with everything else, they're a little bit behind the curve here? You basically need to, you know, catch up with, as you said, the Wild West that's actually been happening for the last few years, really.
Yeah, I mean, the FCA does have a tough job, but it's a little bit like PC Plod trying to chase these much more sophisticated baddies around, basically, because, you know, a lot of it's online, a lot of it's overseas. It's very difficult to pin down where these things are coming from. And the FCA, yes, they're putting some guidelines in place, but that's not going to stop people anytime soon. They need to start, you know, issuing some serious fines. They need to start putting some regulations in place. They need to require these finfluencers to take qualifications. They've got to be qualified. I mean, the French regulators are trying. They're doing a multiple choice questionnaire, 25 questions. There you go. And if you get 8 out of 10, then you get a certificate, which then gives some false, I think, certification. Really, I mean, it's false qualification of these people just for answering a few multiple choice questions. I think the Indian and Australian regulators are a little bit more fierce. They've certainly levied some quite serious fines. US as well. I know Kim Kardashian got fined over $1 million for unlawfully touting a crypto security, and they need to do more of this because these people simply aren't experts. You know, if you wear the wrong shirt, it's not going to cause you too much trouble. Maybe your friends will laugh at you, but if you make the wrong investment, it could have a significant effect on your life. So, you know, finance and health, I think, are two very serious issues. You know, fashion, yes, jolly important to some people, but at the end of the day, you know, it's not going to do you too much harm.
As the academic dean of the London Academy of Trading, are you seeing more and more people actually who don't have this financial education that actually, in a sense, that notion of being part of the common sense aspect kind of goes out of the window? Because, as you said, people are looking to, clearly in a cost of living crisis, look for shortcuts to actually increase their wealth.
Yeah, I mean, I think more than half are reporting a sort of negative impact on the cost of living crisis, and more than one in five admit to turning to finfluencers to make financial decisions because they're just almost keen but even desperate to try and make some more money, make ends meet and make life better for themselves. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. The issue is that they're naive, and, you know, from our perspective, we do see a lot of people coming in who have these horrible stories of, you know, I did this, and I did some, you know, trading in some binary options, and the guy kept telling me to buy and sell and buy and sell. I lost £16,000 in half an hour, and then I had to stop. You know, he said, but I would have won it if I'd put £256,000 on the next bet. You know, I would have got my money back. It's like, well, not everyone's got that money to do that, and so there are people, you know, it's greed, it's hope, it's, you know, wanting for a better life, and it's absolutely natural that we want that. But people are naive, and it's important to do some work, do some learning, and that's what we try to do. We teach people about financial markets, about central banks and how they work and why they're raising interest rates and what inflation means and how it affects us and how we can invest our money more wisely, and we assume no knowledge from anyone. So our courses start at just a 1 week, 4 week and 12 week. We're just a short course provider, And, you know, it's for people to come and learn more about markets and hopefully learn how to make a little bit of extra money for themselves.
The Midweek Drive live each and almost every Wednesday on Siren Radio with Jessica Burtis in Dublin, Anna Lewis in London, Thea Vandenbogert in Balk, the Netherlands, William Coles in Edinburgh. Edinburgh. William Coles in Scotland, and Kathy Manso in Lincoln. Truly a legion of audio aces.
Well, some of those people are on the program. Others will be returning. Phil Leonis is back with us. How are you, Phil Leonis? Are you relieved that the actors' strike is officially over?
No, because the actors' strike is not over. And
well, the writers' strike is.
There have been no negotiations at all. Yes, I mean, yes, the writers' strike is tentatively over. The vote to ratify takes place October 2nd through October 9th. So the strike is tentatively over, and people theoretically can go back to work, but that really only means certain shows because, of course, the actors are out on strike and there have been no dates set.
If only Tosi had asked about the actors' strike and not the writers' strike, then that might have been solved by now.
Next time I'll ask about the actors' strike.
But, you know, I don't get relieved. I don't get excited. I don't even know what time it is, what day it is, or what city I'm in. But I do know that I left some laundry up here in my shot for you all to enjoy.
Nice. Yeah, this is good. You know, this is, again, the medium of radio, the theatre of the mind. We can confirm, and in fact, Megan and Amy and Lauren can also confirm some laundry is actually in Phil Leonis's backdrop there. It's not CGI. It's not artificial intelligence. It is genuine, authentic, reusable fashion. Excellent. Okay, so Phil, we're talking about Finfluencers on that side of things there, and some of the figures you might say interesting. You know, if only you had an extra £256,000 or what about $260,000 to actually work through. We've had a show, as Jessica will allude to in a few moments, which has taken us through the fabulous work of the Boston Tea Party celebration 250 years ago, which the party starts now on the East Coast, which is going to last for 3 years at least up until 2026. But I've got to ask you the question, have you ever smoked, Phil Leonis? And if so, why did you stop?
Have I ever smoked Phil Leonis? What does that even mean?
It was just one of those lines we thought looked good on the paper.
I have smoked tobacco products, yes. Only because I looked so handsome doing it. I mean, that was really the reason. When I wasn't too busy singing like Sinatra or dancing like Astaire, I had a real, Jean Cocteau thing going on. So I always had to have a cigarette. No, I would only ever really honestly smoke. I smoked filterless jetons. And, I was artsy. And I would only ever smoke while I was drinking. Which meant I was smoking all the time.
Yeah, well, thankfully, Stoptober, if you didn't catch that in the early part of the program.
Yeah, no, it's not good. Like, there is no good reason to smoke unless you want to be cool.
Yeah, those are the sort of dangerous lines that we obviously have to differentiate.
Here it is. So this is, I'm going to actually drop a truth bomb on you. You know, for the longest time in this country, there was a movement to try to prevent young people from smoking. And it was an uphill battle because, decades of imagery, everything from album covers to movies, to whatever, rock shows, anything that young people gravitated towards, they would see these figures smoking. And so the campaign was, don't do it, it's not cool. And that campaign lasted so much longer than it needed to because everyone knew the health risks associated with it. Not only did they know, but study after study showed that people, smokers, overestimated the risk factors by a factor of four. They thought they were four times more likely to die because of cigarette smoking than they actually were, which means that there was something deeply intrinsic going on here that had nothing to do with, oh, I think it's cool. Flash forward to all these decades later, where everyone knows that it's bad for you. And I think that, and everybody reacts negatively towards you. You're a social pariah in most places if you smoke. And in the face of those things, if you do it, now I actually do think it's cool, because it means you don't care what other people think and you don't care about the health. You know that you need to seek out a little bit of joy in this miserable existence.
At which point we have to have the caveat, the views of some of our correspondents are not necessarily those that are endorsed by Siren Radio. Just saying. Jessica, it is time...
I'm American. Does anybody need that caveat for an American? I mean, if anyone around the world is listening to what we have to say, well, we're worse off globally than I thought.
Jessica Burtis, as an American from the East Coast of America, prepped obviously for the 250th anniversary of the Boston Tea Party, would you like to summarize the program for the benefit of the late arrival, or indeed the person who actually says, so why should I tune in to the podcast of the Midweek Drive Live for Wednesday, September the 27th, 2023?
I can't wait for Jessica to end with, and then Phil Lernis suggested that young people should smoke. I can't wait for that synopsis.
Yeah. Go, Jess.
All right. So in our first half hour, Anna Lewis in London has had a blustery week with Hurricane Agnes coming. William Coles is sick of the word storms being bestowed on any rain. And in the studio, Tosin, Lauren, Amy, and Megan joined us. Jackie Goodall chatted with us about the botanic exhibition at the Joseph Banks Natural Center in Horncastle. There are over 1,000 newspapers that have been cataloged and feature botanic plants collected in Lincolnshire. The researchers have been delighted to find out about some of the late Victorian and Edwardian botanists. The exhibition focuses on the human story interwoven with a passion for plants. The botanists include people from all walks of life that have been overlooked by history and are having their stories told. In the studio, Lauren, Amy, and Megan have been before and said that the center was well worth the visit, as you always learn something from the experience. In our second half hour, Lisa Stone joined us to discuss eye health and the importance of glasses. We live in a screen-based culture and it can strain our eyes, something many of us have probably felt. Eye health has become essential. Glasses cannot just be necessary, but they're also a great accessory. When we aren't wearing the correct prescription, it can lead us to getting headaches, so wearing glasses or contacts made for you and not just anyone else's prescription is necessary. Importantly, prevention and identification can make a massive difference when it comes to eye health complications. You can find out more details at the Vision Express website about getting your eyes tested. Significant numbers of people are still addicted to nicotine. NHS Dr. Don Harper joined us to discuss it. There are factors such as having a support system that can make someone more likely to quit smoking. Those who don't smoke for 28 days are 5 times more likely to stop for good. Dr. Harper encourages anyone wanting to quit to find the system that works best for them as an individual, such as joining the NHS Stoptober campaign online for communities for more support. Smoking also costs almost £50 a week on average, providing a financial benefit to quitting. You can find out more about the Stoptober campaign online at the NHS website. Have you ever heard of Benjamin Eads? None of the Drivettes had heard of Benjamin before, myself included, or how it related to the Boston Tea Party. Martha Sheridan and actor Josiah George joined us to discuss him. I'm probably biased, but I thought it was a cool topic. Benjamin Eads was born in 1732 and worked as a printer who favored American independence. Articles fueled the American Revolution and served as an influential political conversation starter, shifting that conversation into action. Martha said that the Boston Tea Party will be the kickoff for the 250th anniversary in 2026. The occasion provides a good time to compare the Boston of today with the Boston of the 18th century. Josiah considers the revolution to be a conversation happening across the ocean between the American colonies and Britain. It's a series of actions and responses and can provide an interesting context for how we look at other conflicts in modern day. In our third half hour, actors Malcolm Tomlinson and Rupert Baker joined us to discuss some reflections. There were some audio complications. Zoom foiled Michael and me, so we couldn't really hear Rupert, sadly, but the studio was thankfully still able to listen to him. Once upon a time, Rupert had wanted to be a pilot in the RAF. He'd actually considered a career in graphic design and painting, but went with acting instead. Unfortunately, he hasn't worked with Malcolm yet, but today Malcolm helped me expand the murder mystery lore with himself and Alex, all the studio to hear. And Tosin's 15,000-word dissertation is coming up to its deadline, and he chatted with Malcolm about his chosen topic on fashion NPR. Tosin says that sustainable fashion is coming into style, such as recycling fashion. Malcolm also is a horse race commentary extraordinaire and signed off our half hour with an excellent example. In our fourth half hour, we learned about influencers or financial influencers and how they have a growing impact. Patty Osborne talked with us about this new group of internet creators. He said that he defines a influencer as someone who uses their status to influence their followers and get the benefit from him, but these financial implications are unregulated. The Financial Conduct Authority is trying to define terms and regulations for this, as Patty likens the influencers to the Wild West. He says that the influencers should be certified in a proper way rather than false qualifications obtained through shallow means. More than one in five are actually turning to these financial influencers out of desperation, especially now that we're in a cost of living crisis. Patty says that it's important to do some learning, but incredible sources that help us invest our money wisely and not just trusting anyone. Finally, Phil Ernest joined us with some laundry in the background. When it comes to the actor strikes, he says that it's tentatively over, but negotiations must be made and ratifications must be completed. On the topic of smoking, Phil says that there are decades of imagery in movies and concerts where young people would see their idols smoking, which led to a campaign of don't smoke, it's not cool coming out, but there are some deeper topics happening underneath it with the health complications, and now the social attitude to smoking has shifted a bit, which you'll have to listen to the show to hear a little bit more detail on and Alex's disclaimer. I think for the contributor of the week, I mean, there has to be an honorable mention, I think, for Rupert and Malcolm, considering I couldn't hear Rupert at all. So it would feel unfair to just count him out. I couldn't hear, but I'm sure it was excellent. But I think for maybe, you know, I'm biased, but I'm going to go with it. I have to give it to our Boston Tea Party a bit, because it's a conversation across the ocean, which I think embodies quite a lot about the radio. It's a conversation.
Martha Sheridan and Josiah George, take a bow. And we can confirm, Jessica, that at least our listener and indeed station manager did actually hear the Rupert Bailey. Not all of it, but in the studio we also heard Rupert enunciating, so it's there, it did happen. And there we are, Phil. That's why you should actually, in a couple of hours' time, you know, when you've actually listened again for the umpteenth time to the latest edition of the Chilpack Hollywood Hour, you know, give us a chance to actually have 2 hours of the Midweek Drive live.
This week, our site for Chilpack Hollywood Hour, our official site, which we still maintain, went dead.
No,
I'm not gonna say why, but it was Dean's fault. And I spent about an hour trying to get to the bottom of it, and realized in so doing that I couldn't, and that I did not have it in me to ever rebuild the site again. I've had to do it. You know, we've been doing the show 17 years. I've had to rebuild from scratch a couple of times, and I realized I didn't. And so I, for a moment, thought everything's new again. That's it. I'm done with the show. And then the site went back online, and Lily said, "Why are you disappointed?" So what does that mean?
It means the cosmos is telling us that our mission on the planet is not yet over, Phil. That's quite clearly the message.
Is that what it means?
Yeah.
Is that what it means? Somebody hand me a smoke so I can contemplate that. I didn't realize that my laundry would be a symbol for the dirty laundry of my illicit tobacco past.
Yeah. That everything's a metaphor. Meaning is everywhere. We live in a postmodern world.
I like that Jessica enjoys everything I say, and the co-presenters in the studio are just nonplussed. They don't understand why. They don't know that that me being on this show is part of your social outreach program to help those less fortunate. Right, Alex?
Well, I wasn't going to reveal it, but you have shared that piece of information. Megan, have you enjoyed your time back on the Midweek Drive, even though you'd forgotten the last two questions?
I absolutely have, and I will remember them for next time. Oh. I'm on it. Don't worry.
And Amy, has it been good for you?
I've very much enjoyed my time today.
Didn't really get to talk about Formula E, of course.
Well, I've got 10,000 words to talk about it, so...
Formula E, Phil, is that something that floats your boat?
Formula E, is that one of those male enhancement drugs that they have to test television?
I know where you're going from on that one. No, it's all about electric cars and their racing routines, like Formula One, but on cars, which I suppose you could say.
So yes and, yes. Really, because it's certainly about midlife crises, yeah, one way or another.
So yeah. True. And Lauren, have you been happy?
I've had a great time. I'm getting used to this radio thing.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Spoken by the person who at the first just said, no. No.
I just won't listen to it back. I can't stand the sound of my own voice when you listen to it back on record.
But so. You're from which part of the world?
England. South Yorkshire, specifically.
South Yorkshire. And
I don't know if the Americans here know.
And the name of the place in South Yorkshire is?
Rotherham Swinton.
Rotherham Swinton. Is that Swinton Insurance?
No, I think because there's a Swinton in Manchester.
Of course.
Yeah.
See, drilling down now, Tosin, as you know, is from Nigeria. Tosin, have you managed to sort out Phil's playlist as yet?
Soon. The dissertation is taking my time, but soon,
of course,
Phil.
Exactly.
Just give me time.
Blame Phil. The dissertation. That's the key thing. up next, we have Early Nights doing all sorts of great things as far as Siren Radio is actually concerned. There will be a Midweek Drive Live. There'll be a Midweek Drive Morning Edition tomorrow, and there'll be a Midweek Drive Live, hopefully, next week, if we're spared, as well as, of course, Residence Rewind. Phil, are you back on Residence Rewind duties for Ex Machina?
Oh, that's an interesting film.
And you're saying The Mechanical Man was not?
That would be a fun film to discuss, and no.
There you go. That's a whole new... We could do a pre-record. Anyway, this has been The Midweek Drive Live. Jessica, has it been good for you?
Oh, yeah, it's been very fun.
As a gatekeeper, would you like to have a second Harry Styles number, this time Watermelon Sugar, which is, you know, an extraordinary sort of line? Is that because, I mean, basically it's up to you, Jessica. We can go down that line, or we can go to Peter Sarsgaard and Where Do You Go To, My Lovely? Again, very sophisticated in its own French way. And, of course, a nod in the direction of the sad late departed Ducky from NCIS, Steel from Sapphire and Steel, and, of course, Ilya Kuryakin. And, of course, from The Sixth Finger as well, David McCallum, who's headed off to join Alexander Waverley and Napoleon Solo in that great scenario. Presumably, Phil, you'll be doing a celebrity death on David McCallum.
Sure.
Yes.
Yes.
Good.
Excellent. I mean, once I can get over the crushing pain of it and...
Yeah. Well, you know, 90 years of age and he's still good. Anyway, or was. Anyway, Jessica, what are you going to do, musically speaking? Watermelon Sugar or Where Do You Go To, My Lovely?
Where Do You Go, My Lovely? What, that one sounds adorable. We'll go with that one.
So you've kicked out Harry. Thank the Lord for the Americans is all I can say. Harry Styles has given a non-starter. We had him lined up for Watermelon Sugar. Jessica, rightly so, has exercised her right as senior co-presenter to go for this. It's a good way of actually saying farewell after three. Where do you go to, my lovely? One, two, three. Where do you go to, my lovely?
You talk like Marlene Dietrich, and you dance like Zizi Jamet. Your clothes are all made by Balmain, and there's diamonds and pearls in your hair. Yes, there are. You live in a fancy apartment off the boulevard Saint-Michel, where you keep your Rolling Stones records and a friend of Sacha Distel. Yes, you do. But where do you go to, my lovely, when you're alone in your bed? Tell me the thoughts that surround you. I want to look inside your head, yes I do. I've seen all your qualifications you got from the Sorbonne, and the painting you stole from Picasso. Your loveliness goes on and on, yes it does. When you go on your summer vacation, you go to Juan-les-Pins with your carefully designed topless swimsuit. You get
and even suntan on your back and on your legs. And when the snow falls, you're found in Samoritz with the others of the jet set. And you sip your Napoleon brandy, but you never get your lips wet. No, you don't. But where do you go to, my lovely, when you're alone in your bed? Won't you tell me the thoughts that surround you? I want to look inside your head, yes I do. Your name, it is heard in high places. You know the Aga Khan. He sent you a racehorse for Christmas, and you keep it just for fun, for a laugh. They say that when you get married, it'll be to a millionaire, but they don't realize where you came from. And I wonder if they really care or give a damn. Where do you go to, my lovely, when you're alone in your bed? Tell me the thoughts that surround you. I want to look inside your head, yes I do. I remember the back streets of Naples, two children